welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for tuning in, guys. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 44, and this week's guest is the wonderful Hugh Stevens. He came and met me in my hotel room. I was staying in a hotel in London. I'd had a bit of a rough night there, to be honest. It wasn't enjoyable. The TV didn't work. And then the room was all controlled by touchscreens, which seemed wonderful when you're closing the curtains by robot. But essentially, touchscreens glow all fucking night, so I couldn't get any sleep. But anyway, sponsors, speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Go check us out. You could get my Edinburgh Fringe show. The Edinburgh Fringe is on at the moment, and it's absolutely amazing. I'm definitely going to be in attendance to watch some stuff if I can get away from Essex. But yeah, you can catch my Fringe show from 2013, which it got 5-star reviews and it was sold out for 19 nights in a row. So that's pretty cool. It's only a fiver to download from speechdevelopmentrecords.com. You can buy the DVD for 15, but it's a 2-DVD set with loads of extras and interviews. So essentially, it's got the first podcast I ever did on there because I sat down and we filmed a chat with me, Polar Bear, Moose Rock Wonga, and Kate Tempest. And it was essentially a podcast, but we just didn't know it at the time. So check that out. But yeah, onto this episode. Hugh Stevens, what a dude. It was an absolute joy. You'll hear, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a topic that we discussed at the start that made me so happy because his passion for it, and it was unexpected. I didn't expect it. I expected to talk a lot and learn a lot about Welsh culture and Welsh language and radio and everything else. And I mean, make no mistake, he's a unique figure in radio, in that he signed at the age of 17 to the biggest radio station in the country and one of the biggest in the world, as a presenter. So yeah, amazing stuff. I hope you enjoy it. I'll be back at the end to tell you some stuff. Right, I'm rolling and I'm joined by Hugh Stevens. How are you?
Very well, Pip. Nice to see you.
This is a weird scenario because I've invited you to my sleazy hotel room, like the 12th floor of a fancy posh hotel room. Yeah. And you've come in and there's a Polaroid camera on the table. That's for the podcast. That's nothing weird. But thank you very much for coming in to chat.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. And as you said, you know, we are in your hotel room and I haven't been in someone's hotel room for an interview for a long time.
Yeah.
There used to be a time in Cardiff when that's where you'd go. I remember interviewing the Hives in a hotel room. And,
yeah, of course.
Anthony Hegarty from Anthony and the Johnsons
in
a hotel room in Brussels. But you've kept it in, you know, it's spick and span.
It's just rare when it's in London because generally, as you said, that's a touring thing. It's like, right, we can't find a studio. Fact is, I was too cheap to find a studio.
Right.
So it's like, well, I've got a hotel room. Let's meet there. There's fruit,
which is
bottles
untouched
of water.
Yeah, there's a big telly. It's a huge TV.
Yeah, it's pretty big. The annoying part is it doesn't actually work.
Does it not?
No, I got in last night from the event I was doing, and I'm incredibly boring, so I got in at like 9:45, and I thought, I'll watch TV. Every channel you put it on, it plays for around a minute and then freezes.
Right, no good.
Which is it's not a fun way to watch TV, I'll be honest with you. So I had quite a boring night, which means I'm well prepared for today's interview, which is, you know, there's bonuses. So can we talk about, I mean, you said obviously already, I mentioned Cardiff. You're bizarrely, I think, only a second Welsh guest. After Howard, yeah.
I checked to see who else. Obviously, you know, I've listened to some of the podcasts, not all of them.
Yeah.
But
no, there's a lot to get through.
The Zane Lowe one, John Kennedy a couple of episodes ago was brilliant. Yeah. Just radio people.
Just keep it to radio people. Yeah. But yeah, so you grew up in Cardiff. What kind of upbringing did you have? Was music always an essential part of your life? And how easy was that in Cardiff? Because I know, you know, Cardiff at least has the HMV and the, you know, a few of the bigger stores, but in Wales it can be It can be tough to find, yeah, to find music at points.
I mean, Cardiff's the capital of Wales, yeah, down south, so it's the bigger city. I mean, you've got Newport and Swansea and in the middle Aberystwyth and then up north Bangor and, yeah, Wrexham. But yeah, growing up in Cardiff, I had, you know, an idyllic childhood. I'm from a part of Cardiff, one of the suburbs called Whitchurch.
Yeah.
It's about 15 minutes on the train into town.
Perfect.
Very quiet, beautiful.
And it's beautiful in Wales because 15 minutes on the train is enough to feel really out. You know what I mean? To be out in nature and, yeah, and beauty. It's kind of, it's so good. I'm a big fan of Wales. My brother used to live in a cottage in Lampeter. He studied at Lampeter Uni.
And yeah.
Just going around all those areas, it's like you just see how quickly it can go from here's everything we need, but let's keep all that in one spot and then let's make the rest of this place just beautiful and open.
There's a lot of beautiful,
yeah,
green spaces and, you know, countryside across the whole of Wales. Even from Cardiff, you know, 20 minutes out, yeah, and you're on top of the Garth Mountain, yeah, or you're in Penarth by the sea.
Yeah.
I mean, and Cardiff as a city, as you know, you've been there plenty, yep, of times, it's small, you know. Yeah. You can walk from one side to the other in 15 minutes.
Yeah, completely.
Like a lot of cities, you know, other than London, you know, you go to Leeds or Sheffield, yeah, and Manchester, the main nucleus, if you like, you can walk, yeah, from one side to the other quite quickly.
You kind of condense it to essentially a high street. There's,
yeah,
offshoots.
Yeah, yeah,
there's,
yeah,
a castle at the bottom, but yes, yeah, you know, there's a great castle
in Cardiff. Yeah. I went there recently for the Manic Street Preachers.
Oh, wow.
They played a big...
the Manics in Cardiff, that must be a huge show.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been amazing. Like 1999, they played the Millennium Stadium.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I remember I just got a mobile phone.
Yeah.
And watching the Manics. It was amazing. And so they've played, obviously they haven't done the stadium since then, but they did the CIA, which is, yeah, the big arena in Cardiff. And they'd done that, and this was the Holy Bible they were playing, yeah, in full. So they did Cardiff Castle. Wow. And that was brilliant.
Everyone I know who's a Manics fan, if anyone tries to argue the Manics aren't good, they say... listen to the Holy Bible. They say you're allowed to not like the Manics, but you can't deny that the Holy Bible is an amazing record.
Absolutely, yeah. When you listen to that from start to finish, it's an intense listen. And, yeah, listening to it live is intense. And,
yeah, I can imagine.
You know, the interviews the Manics did about that, I think they said they found it knackering to, yeah, play lyrically. And yeah, I love the Manics. I saw them at Latitude most recently.
Right,
they,
yeah,
played,
yeah,
on the main stage, you know.
Yeah.
They've got so many great songs, haven't they, for, yeah, you know, anthems. They didn't do it, the Holy Bible at Latitude. They did, right, like a greatest hit set, if you like.
Because again, I find the doing a full album thing that's come in really fascinating, because every album I've ever done, there's songs on it that we've never played live.
Right.
There's songs that aren't live songs, so I find it fascinating, because at first you think, oh, they're going to have to relearn all these songs, and you think some of them they're going to have to learn essentially for the first time again. It's because they've never done that, drilling them live and figuring out how they work live. So,
of course, yeah.
It's a fascinating thing.
Must take a lot of rehearsal,
a lot of
practice. And as you say, because I listened to your interview with John, as I said, yeah, John Kennedy, and you said that you were writing songs which you never thought that you'd
play
live.
That anyone
live
would hear, yeah, and play live and anything, yeah. So it's weird to then have to be forced into that. So were the Manics the kind of... a music that you were into growing up? I don't want to be stereotypical and say the Manics, the Stereophonics, and, you know...
But
was it like? Yeah, exactly.
It was, you know. So, no, I got into music late. We had records at home. We had Johnny Cash records.
Yeah.
We had a lot of Welsh language records.
Yes.
A lot of Welsh language protest singers like Dafydd Iwan, who's still a very successful, yeah, singer in Wales. And my cousins were in bands. So... I knew that there was music out there, and I'd listen to, you know, I'd watch Top of the Pops,
yeah,
and CD UK and whatever,
yeah,
else was,
yeah, yeah,
on the Saturday mornings, you know, watch the videos. And then I got into music when I was about 13, 14. I started listening to the radio.
Yeah.
Before that, I was into Magic exclusively.
Brilliant.
Magic was my passion. I used to go around doing magic shows for kids in
Cardiff.
Amazing.
You've got, and this sounds like an awful plug now, but you've got to listen to when we had Alan Moore on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got an obsession with magic, and he talks about his philosophies behind magic and about magic, and it's absolutely amazing. Yeah, what kind of stuff were you into? What were your areas?
You know, my entry point, if you like, was Paul Daniels.
Obviously.
Of course. Paul Daniels and Debbie McGee, prime time, BBC One, Saturday night, 6 p.m. Sewing Ladies in Half, Lincoln Rings, Magic Trick Bunnies. You know, I loved it.
Yeah.
David Copperfield was around.
Yeah.
Younger listeners to your podcast, people. He's like an older David Blaine.
Yeah, essentially, isn't he? He was an early David Blaine. He was cool and credible, but
He went out with Claudia Schiffer.
There you go. I think. How much cooler and more credible can you get? It's weird that we've never gone that route on Saturday night at TV since. Obviously, Dynamo and people like that have blown up and had shows, but they're always kind of cool late night, weeknight type things. Rather than at that point, that was a massive deal, wasn't it? To have the magic shows on a Saturday night and stuff like that. It was exciting.
It was. It's like music, isn't it? It's like the international language of magic. In that, you know, Paul Daniels would get a Romanian magician on, or you know, I don't know, from anywhere in the world, he'd have a different magician on, and they wouldn't speak, but there'd be some awful cheesy music on, and they'd do their magic, and it worked on every stage in the world.
Yeah, completely. And it's just it's so translatable in that way. Yeah, it's brilliant.
That's what I liked it really, was that it was entertaining. And obviously then I started learning the tricks with my Paul Daniels magic set. Came to see David Copperfield playing in Earl's Court.
Oh, wow.
I think for my 11th birthday.
Did you have any annoyance over Tommy Cooper? Because he was the master of making it look as if he was useless when actually it was incredibly skilled and masterful. So there's a level of that I think you'd watch that and go, oh, I'll learn that. And then you can never pull it off quite actually as slick, even though he's made it look ridiculous.
That's it. I mean, Tommy Cooper is the ultimate, isn't it?
Yeah.
As you say, he makes it look so easy.
Intentionally, yeah.
But for magicians, it would be even better. For people who thought they were proper magicians, like I did, going, I know how he does that, and I know what he's going to do to make people think that it's gone wrong. It's so clever, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, I loved magic and Close Up, and I used to spend all my pocket money on. There's a shop. I don't know if you've been to Davenport Magic.
No, I don't know.
Charing Cross.
Right.
So next time, if you're ever in London, Pips podcast listeners, go to and you stop off at Charing Cross, get off, and in the underground.
Yes.
There's like a gym shop which sells weights and stuff. And opposite that, there's Davenport's Magic, which is the most incredible shop.
I'm sure I've looked in there. It's kind of quite packed, isn't it? It's kind of packed. Overwhelming with what it's got in there.
And it's not in a row of shops. It's quite in a... You don't know. It's really weird when you find it. Yeah. But if you're into it, go and have a little look.
I love the mystery of shops like that. I always remember when my dad took us once in... There's kind of near Bond Street. There's kind of off the beaten track. There's essentially a spy shop.
All right.
And it just sells all spy stuff. Wow. So it's all listening devices. It's got like a one man submarine. Genuinely, it's got all sorts of camera stuff and just weird. And the sad thing is, because I ended up speaking to him for something I was making, and they were saying the sad thing is we generally have old husbands in getting stuff to because they think their wives are cheating on them.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of sad. You have this illusion of it being this, you know, this secret agent, James Bond. It's like, no, it's rich old men who think their pretty young wives are cheating on them, and they probably are.
Is the shop still there?
Yeah, right, it is. Right. It's great. It's just, it's by a big square. I can't think of the name of it, but it's easy enough to find, but it's just a spy shop. It's beautiful.
I love that.
Yeah. So
it's the same with the magic shop, really. You feel like you're entering a bygone era, you know.
Yeah, completely.
The cups and balls are covered with dust.
Yeah.
The magic wands are a little bit saggy.
Yeah, exactly.
But you'll see something amazing there. And that's what I love about it. There's the whole discipline thing about it.
Yeah.
I guess it's like I don't play any instruments, but I spend a lot of time learning sleight of hand, and, you know, in the mirror, at home, doing magic.
It's the discipline of it all. To then be able to, again, as we said earlier, to then be able to casually do it at a later date. And it's the same. I was discussing with someone last night that a while ago I started learning piano and I've stopped for a bit. But I want to learn just quietly and privately so that one day in 10 years' time there'll be a piano somewhere and I won't have mentioned it and I'll just be able to casually just start playing. And it's the same thing. You'll put tens of hours into sleight of hand just so you can casually go, here you go. And make it a throwaway thing. Yeah. You know, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Dynamo does so well, isn't it? Yeah. I know there's camera crews there and they've put a lot of effort into making the TV shows, but he's got that just talent, hasn't he? He's got that enthusiasm. Yeah. He's so humble and you would notice him.
Just that kind of, just look at this.
And then boom.
Do you want to look at this quickly? And it's, oh my word, that's amazing.
It's a block of ice.
So did you ever do anything with your magic? Were you a gigging magician at any point? Well, as a youngster, I'd imagine.
I was when I was like 11.
Yeah.
I named myself Houdini.
Houdini, brilliant name.
Because I was obsessed with all the old magicians.
Brilliant name.
Harry Houdini, David Devant.
Yeah.
Chung Ling Su, Ali Bongo, Paul Daniels, even though he was still around.
Yeah.
I just loved it all. And I was the only Welsh-speaking magician in Cardiff and the area for a while. So you'd have all these kids' parties.
Yeah.
And they needed entertainment
in
Welsh. So I offered my services and I did like half-hour magic shows.
That's brilliant.
For about 2, 3, 4 years.
I loved it.
I spent all the money on more magic tricks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I got into music, when I was about 14, 15, thanks to the radio, I then started spending the money less on magic tricks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a lot of hobbies, you get bored.
Yeah.
And you realise that you're not that good.
Yeah.
And you better leave this to people who actually know what they're doing, you know.
Yeah. It's got to be a point where you have to have that horrible realisation of, I'm really good at doing these wonderful tricks that someone else has told me how to do, if you know what I mean, rather than being the ones who are going, right, let's reinvent, you know what I mean, that creativity. You go, damn, I'm good at learning, which again is a good thing, but
I guess so, but it's the only thing I've been good at learning,
and
even that I didn't do that well. You know, it was magic tricks.
You still had the best name for a Welsh speaking magician.
Well,
that's
Houdini,
just Houdini's genius.
Yeah, it was a good one.
I mean, I've got some notes and we're going to go along, and obviously we're going to get into radio, but you mentioned a Welsh speaking a few times, and that's, I know, an important thing to you, and you've released music, you know, you've had a label still releasing a Welsh speaking music. But how important is that to you, and the preservation of the language, and why?
Well, I mean, I was brought up as a Welsh speaker, so Welsh is my first language. English is my second language. I spoke Welsh at home. I still speak Welsh with my mum and dad, and my sisters, and, you know, my family. My wife speaks Welsh as well, so I speak it at home in London as well.
Yeah.
And I still work in Welsh. You know, I do a show once a week for BBC Radio Cymru,
which
is a two-hour pop music show, essentially, on the Welsh BBC service. So, I mean, Welsh is, you know, Welsh is my first language. So growing up, that's the language that we speak at home. My dad learnt it in uni and brought us up speaking Welsh, even
that's
though he's
great.
From an English-speaking family and background originally, you know. But my mum was from Aberystwyth and my dad was from the Valleys, from Pontypridd. So, Welsh is a big part of my life, I guess.
And it's great to... I think it is important to preserve these things, but I think the releasing of music and culture in Welsh is important, because it's not just preserving. It's not going, oh, here's some old stuff or some traditional hymns or whatever. It's going, no, this is something that we can keep alive and keep as a valid and engaging thing.
We do both things really well in Wales.
Yeah.
We celebrate the past really well. We've got the Eisteddfod, which is the Welsh... language, the Welsh Cultural Festival.
Yeah.
The first one ever was on Primrose Hill in London.
Yeah.
And there's a plaque. If you ever go to Primrose Hill, there's this big circular plaque on the top of the hill about Iolo Morgannwg and the first ever Eisteddfod of the Bards of Britain.
Yeah.
And then it moves to a different part of Wales every year. So it'll go north and south and vice versa and so on and so on. So it's a week-long celebration of the Welsh arts.
That's amazing,
I guess there's poetry recitals. You can win a crown and a chair, and you know, people enter poems and dramas, and there's traditional dancing. And then at night there's the gig element. So you have the new bands playing in a field, you know, and hundreds of thousands of people go to this.
Amazing.
Every year. It's one of the, I think,
again, as you said, that's key to keep it.
It's huge.
To keep
it
valid. Otherwise, it will become like the school fate. So, do you know what I mean? The thing that your parents are making you go to.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's that key to go, right, actually, we're all also going to get drunk and enjoy ourselves, as well as this part of culture and history, you know?
Absolutely. I read an amazing article recently in Loud and Quiet Music magazine with Gwenno. So Gwenno is signed to Heavenly Records now, and she's just released a Welsh language album. There's one song in it in Cornish.
Right.
It's had amazing reviews, and she's, it's a brilliant album, and she's playlisted on BBC Six Music.
Amazing.
So I'll be in the kitchen listening to Six Music, and all of a sudden a Welsh language song will come on.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. I feel the need to tweet it every time I hear as you do, because it's so exciting. You know, without a big introduction going, now, listen, listeners, this is in Welsh.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't speak Welsh, you may not like that. If you know, you might want to turn away. So it's really exciting. So, and Gwenno says in the article that if you can't cry and laugh and kind of enjoy everything through the language that you speak, then what's the point? You know, you've got to have everything available. So you have to have middle of the road. You have to have experimental. Yeah. And it's all there. Just obviously it's, there's about 500,000, I think, Welsh speakers. So it's on a smaller scale.
No, but still, that's still a huge amount. And again, it goes a long way to explain and justify why it's something that needs preserving and helps preserving. Because again, as you said, if that's your language, if that's your first language, then it's outrageous to say that the only way that you can use it is in traditional text or in traditional this or that kind of thing.
Absolutely, and that's how I got into music, really. Yeah. Was knowing that, I used to listen to Radio Cymru, to the late night shows.
Yeah.
So the first hip hop I got into was Welsh language hip hop.
Oh wow.
It was that, and then the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
Hello Nasty, Intergalactic. Yeah, of course. My in point to the world of hip hop.
So is there a lot of Welsh language hip hop? Because again, it's a fascinating language with sounds that we don't really have in English. So again, there's, I always find that exciting with French hip hop, with German hip hop, with all sorts of other stuff that, even though I'm not understanding it, you get to go, wow, they've got some different tools to play with. There's a different setup of different sounds and rhythms that they can use because of the language that they're speaking in.
Of course, there's different tones and jokes and pauses and just sounds. Like our oi is probably something incredible in German. I don't know what it is.
But
there has been a lot of interest in Welsh hip-hop. The first crew I got into was Tustion. It was 1997, the album came out. So it'll be coming up to 20 years.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting because it wasn't a Welsh... I mean, you've got everything traditional. I mean, you've got choirs and you've got folk. But then even bands became traditional in a way.
Yeah.
Like another indie rock band, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this was hip-hop and it was so exciting. And they'd swear in Welsh and they made a warning offensive language sticker in Welsh.
Brilliant.
On the sleeve.
And again, it's exciting because, as you said, because it was a new or such a new genre... It had only been in an American accent originally. I mean, even hearing English hip hop was exciting because you're like, wow, it's that, but it's not, as you said, it's not just a rock band, it's not just a metal band or whatever, it's this different thing. So I can't even imagine how exciting that must be in your native tongue.
Absolutely. I loved Skinny Man and Roots Maneuver and the odd hip hop track that I'd hear on the radio, in an English accent. I knew with Rodney P a little bit that kind of thing. But to hear it then in Welsh,
mind-blowing, right?
And obviously within Wales, there's not just one Welsh accent. There's a Valleys accent, there's a North Wales accent, there's a Cardiff accent. So you've got all these, it goes smaller and smaller. Within Cardiff, you've got different accents, So, that was a big one. And then since then, there's been a lot of interesting hip-hop, a crew called Pepla Pew from Bluff Madog in North Wales, Pepla Pew. And there's a guy called Mr. Formula called Ed Holden, who's a great beatboxer. And he... mentors a lot of young rappers coming through as well. He releases them on his own label. He's got his own studio in North Wales.
Yeah.
So he does a lot of interesting things. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the time and effort and focus that you had to put into to learning sleight of hand and magic was clearly something that you applied to music as well. Because saying you only really got into music at 14, 15, you must have gone in pretty fucking hard because you were then, I think you were 17, weren't you, when Radio 1 took you on as the youngest host they've ever had. So, I mean, to go from not really being into music to being a Radio 1 standard, kind of a representative of your country and everything, is that's pretty intense. So that must have been a real jump in.
It was intense, and it was a jump in. I mean, what happened was, when I was, I guess, 14 onwards, I got obsessed with radio.
Yeah.
Virgin 1215 AM was something that I'd listen to all the time.
Yeah,
they had, this is how old school it is, they had an on-air campaign to get Virgin 1215 AM onto FM.
Brilliant.
You'd have to write to them. They'd send you petitions in the post, which I would then take to school.
Amazing.
Persuade my fellow classmates, look, just sign this, we want to get Virgin on
the
FM.
Dedication, yeah.
Post it back and you'd get a sticker in return.
Yeah.
It's like, ah, thank God for the internet, right?
I love that.
So it was, Virgin Radio was everything, and I was obsessed with it. Then I got into Steve Lamacq and Joe Wiley in the evening session, and Radio 1, and John Peel, listening to their shows. And because Virgin made me think, you know, that they'd play Crowded House and Sheryl Crow and Alanis Morissette. And I thought that was it. I thought, this is the most exciting music out there.
Yeah.
And then obviously your dimensions change, don't they? Yeah. So listening to Steve Lamacq and Joe Wiley play Oasis and Blur and Fatboy Slim is like, oh, okay, there's something out there called Big Beat. And, you know,
it's fascinating. People like Lamacq and Joe, where they've now found their homes and you're now used to them, you kind of forget how key that they were for new music, like on Radio 1 and things like that. And just how, even though particularly at Joe's kind of peak in that way, I don't want to say peak because I think she's maintained a level, but a peak in that way of Paul, that was, everyone referred to it as the most powerful kind of show in music, in the industry, at least it was referred to as that. But she would be bringing through a new music. She wouldn't just be playing a playlist. She would genuinely be passionate about it and genuinely know what she was talking about. And I said, Lamacq as well. Obviously, everyone always references Peel, and rightfully so, for all he did for bringing through a new music. But people like Lamacq, and as we mentioned, John Kennedy around that time were doing exactly the same.
It's late night radio, isn't it, basically?
And
it's the excitement of the new, I suppose, and what you don't know what you're going to hear next. And you know, I went from Billy Joel and Meatloaf to the world of new music at night and fell in love with it, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right, it is so exciting. And that's what got me hooked, I guess. At the same time, all the Welsh bands were blowing up, you know. Stereophonics were coming out for the first time with a great debut album. Manics were, you know, already at three albums deep, but, you know, Everything Must Go was coming out.
Yeah.
And then you had Super Furry Animals and Catatonia.
Of course.
And Gorky's Iconic Monkey.
Gorky's, legendary.
You know, I adored those three bands.
Yeah.
And they were from my country. You'd see them in Cardiff.
Yeah.
You'd see, you know, I remember seeing Gorky's walking into a rehearsal space and then hearing them on John Peel that night. And I remember,
I had, you know, great excitement. So I heard Gorky's on Radio 5 Live the other day.
All right.
So when again, I'm sure you could predict it was Mr. Colin Murray choosing this, because, again, another one who at Radio 1 just played some amazing stuff and really brought a lot of great music for you. But they have a thing on his show where you're allowed to choose a song for the day, and he chose, and all the sports commentators were all mocking him and saying, this is weird, what's going on? And he was just saying, Gorky's are just a wonderful band. And it was, I think it was one of their more summery songs. It was a nice summery day. I was like,
wow,
man, I never thought I'd hear Gorky's on a talk sport channel.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's good on Colin.
Yeah.
I mean, he's right, they are a wonderful band, and you know, they I could go and see him play in Cardiff.
Yeah.
So you'd read about these bands in Melody Maker NME.
Yeah.
You'd see them on Jules Holland or Top of the Pops. You'd hear them on the radio, and they were from your town.
Yeah.
Your city.
Again, there's so that extra exciting connection and excitement, isn't there?
You know, I can't put into words how exciting it was and how wonderful it felt, and proud, I guess you were.
Yeah, yeah.
So at the same time, then you wanted, like, that, you know, you wanted to know who was next.
Yeah.
So you'd find out about local labels, and there was a label called Angst, which was first released Super Furries and Gorky's, but did Topper and Big Leaves and lots of other great bands as well.
It's crazy because you forget how many at that time. Oh, I forget how many at a time. As soon as you're listing Super Furries and Catatonia and all these, they were all huge at that point, and Catatonia in particular just absolutely blew up. Kind of think of the Manics and Stereophonics, and that's the big blow up of Welsh. But no, there were particularly at that point, I'd say Catatonia were potentially the biggest of the lot in chart success and whatnot at that point.
I mean, Kerris Matthews, incredible radio host now, right? Yeah, and does amazing, really interesting things with music. But she was a brilliant rock and roll front woman as well. Yeah. You know, she did it so well.
And again, it's beautiful to see how that translates, because her show, again, it still has that a creativity of trying to do interesting stuff. Do you know what I mean? Not just going, here's some songs. Like, really, you feel involved when she's doing her stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of work goes into that show, I think. You can tell by listening, you know, that...
Yeah, completely. It's not just turn up next? And let's play some songs now, yeah.
I like that on the radio as well.
Yeah, but, completely.
But, you know, sometimes it's... Yeah, you can tell that she's pored over that show for a week.
Again, the thing that's already jumping out as fascinating as to me is because... I mean, I know you're... You know, the same age as me, but it's still weird because you got in so young. Yeah. I've always seen you as being around and on the radio or about. That it's fascinating when you're then going, so in my teens, I was listening to the Manics and all that. It's like, that feels odd because obviously with John Kennedy, he was like, in my teens, it was the 70s and this kind of thing. But I guess because you got in at such a young age, your teens were when you were then potentially thinking about what influence you could have as well and what you could push out there and get out there.
That's it. It was very much, I want to get involved. I'm not in a band.
Yeah.
But it, like every, most DJs, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, how do I get involved? I love this music. Yeah. I want to get, you know, so I'd write fanzines.
I've got a good CD collection. Yeah. So how can I turn this into something?
Exactly. And being a DJ sounded like the best job ever.
Yeah.
And I think it probably is one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's... I just got into hospital radio then.
Yep.
So through the Duke of Edinburgh Award, there was a youth club in Whitchurch.
Yep.
They got me into hospital radio. And I'd volunteer there. So I did that for about 2 years. So I would sort out the vinyl, put it in alphabetical order, dust the vinyl, sort out the studios and watch DJs do their shows. Then I got my own show on a Tuesday night, then a Saturday. So, you know, I got to play new Welsh bands next to Roxy Music.
Amazing,
You know, all this great music, you know. So that's where I learned how to do radio, I suppose.
And again, I guess the freedom essentially of hospital radio, because again, I think history has shown that can be a great proving ground and training ground, because essentially it sounds harsh, but they're grateful to have someone doing this, so you can kind of a lot of the time choose a lot of your own, go, right, I'm just gonna, here's some stuff I want to share with you, rather than going straight into somewhere like Daytime Radio 1, which obviously no one can go straight into, but just using this example where here's what you have to play now, you know, you know, or to an extent, it's obviously it's deeper than that, but to an extent. So starting off somewhere where you can have such variation must have set you up well to first, I assume you first came in on Welsh a BBC radio, right? Was it straight?
I was straight into Radio 1.
Jumping straight into Radio 1,
mental,
I love it.
So I was doing hospital radio.
It's insane, yeah. Hospital radio to the biggest station
incredible.
In the country.
But it was Radio 1, it was Radio 1 in Wales. So I should say, when is all these Welsh bands doing really well, and their music being incredible, it was Devolution in Wales as well. So the Welsh Assembly was being established. Mm. And so, you know, there's definite connection there, I think, between the excitement in Wales and the whole devolution in the UK of Scotland getting its own parliament, Wales getting an assembly to begin with, and in around 1999. So Radio 1 at the time, I think the BBC Trust said, you need to do more in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
So they split the network.
Yeah.
So on a Thursday night at 7:30 p.m., Wales would get his own show.
And
Beth and Alvin got the job of presenting. Scotland was Vic Galloway and Jill Mills.
Yeah.
And then Northern Ireland was the aforementioned Colin Murray and Donna Legg, you know. So so Steve Lamacq would still broadcast in England.
How great is that? That was the
way it
went. Again, it's kind of sad that isn't there now, because the beauty of that now would be that you'd also, with digital, be able to tune in anywhere to any of them.
That
would be an amazing thing if we had this specific... all these different regions with that, with again, such great hosts, Vic, Colin, everyone, amazing. They've done amazing things. So
yeah, no, it was really exciting.
That's a great
obviously
time.
That was on FM, and obviously digital radio hadn't kicked in.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, listening online was it was happening, but not on the scale that it is now, of course. Yeah. So we were really lucky that the BBC did it. It cost a lot of money to do, like everything does. So, and that was our way in, and that was. You know, it was a dream come true. I never thought I'd be a Radio 1 DJ.
Yeah.
Not in a million years. I thought I'd like to be a DJ, but I was happy doing, you know, my hospital radio shows. I was answering the phones at the local BBC.
Brilliant.
So I knew what a BBC studio looked like.
Yeah.
I'd go to gigs. I'd write, you know, do reviews for the radio.
Yeah.
But I never thought we'd do that. But that's what happened. You know, they were looking for Welsh presenters. So Bethan, Elvin and myself, we got the job of doing it. We did it for 7 years, I think, on Radio 1 in Wales. And then we'd get a chance then to stand in for Steve Lamacq.
Yeah.
And then obviously Zane Lowe came in, so we'd stand in for Zane.
Yeah.
And do that. And
again, I mean, I feel you've always been a go-to guy for stand-ins as well, which I think is a great thing on daytime,
Super
on evening,
dep.
On anywhere. Kind of, it seems to be, oh, we've got someone off for a period. And we've Zane and with other people, you feel that they fit where they fit, and that's where they fit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's kind of but if it felt like they were always excited and happy to slot you, you know, to try you out at least
that's
anywhere.
It. Yeah, that's what business is doing. It. That's what companies and corporations do. They try people out and see if they can do it. So when I was like, you know, you're right. I have depth for a lot of people, stood in for a lot of people. And I've loved that, you know.
I mean, a massive one, obviously, in 2005, with the passing of John Peel, you, Ruz Kwame and Rob the Bank were kind of the three that were filling that void for a period, kind of, to kind of step in and go, right, we need that, a late night and a new music vibe, which, as you said, you only discovered that some years before.
It's
do you know what I mean?
It's
that's
true,
what
yeah.
you'd fallen in love with. So to get to then, obviously under tragic circumstances, because it's losing a great, but still to get to step in there and go, right now, I mean, it must have been less than 10 years ago that you were like, 10 years ago I was discovering this.
Absolutely,
and now
yeah.
I am this.
Well, I mean, yeah.
You know, amazing.
But it was great to do those shows. They called it One Music. They developed like a, for want of a better word, a brand, like a name of for the three shows. It was One Music, which I guess later became BBC Introducing, you know. So to do it with Rob and Ras, and we had our own two-hour show.
Yeah.
As you say, in tragic circumstances, after John Peel died. And I met him a couple of times, you know, and got to meet, you know, talk to him about music, go to his house and talk to him about Welsh bands like Dat Blygi.
Wow.
I was still going. So, you know, it was incredible. It was such an exciting time. And, yeah, I mean, so since then, we just kind of...
I love the BBC respect of Peel there of when he's gone. It's like, we're going to need at least three people to replace him. Which, again,
that?
I love that. That's kind of beautiful as well, because, like, it's going to be tough to find... Because it... And I guess taking a completely new format of that One Music type approach was a way of not putting the pressure on anyone to be... the new John Peel.
It
took the pressure off of going, right, Hugh, I'm afraid you're now having to fill these shoes, which is a huge amount of pressure. So that's a kind of a great idea to go, no, here's a new thing. Here's what we're doing here.
I don't think any of us thought we were replacing in any way.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of talk since then, you know, since
everyone's
John's passing.
Who is the new John Peel?
Who is, and I don't think that will ever happen.
I agree.
I think it was a true one off. And obviously there's BBC Six Music, which a lot of people say, well, that is the John Peel replacement.
It
took a whole station
to
reflect.
I get
but
that.
Of course, I think he was so good at what he did over the decades, particularly when I got into him. You know, it was an exciting time because it was before the internet.
Yeah.
And it was before digital radio, it was before online listening, and it was on, you know, it was when FM radio was still king. So those two, 3 hours he was on doing the show, playing whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
It was like a musical map on the airwaves.
Oh, that was it. I mean, that's
And I think a lot of shows still do that. You know, there's that ethos, there's that Peel-esque ethos of we like a bit of everything, we'll play a bit of everything.
Completely. It feels that on the BBC after Peel, it felt that ethic and essence went into you, to Robbie, to Zayn in many extents that it was like, right, this isn't the rock show, this isn't the hip hop show, this is a music show. And again, I mentioned this to John, but your show, I'd say, is one as well, that when, as a label manager now, when we've got a new band, yours is one of the shows that will go, well, it's worth sending to Hugh, because it could fit regardless of the genre. With like, again, I'm a massive fan of Eddie Temple Morris's show, but there's certain stuff I know isn't going to fit his show.
Sure.
I'm going to go, right, there's too much guitar in this, or, you know, or vice versa. Whereas your show is still one of them ones standing there that you can go, right, no, it's worth running by, you know.
It's a platform, isn't it? It's what we do. It's always that thing of DJs, people say, oh, I've got a really eclectic music taste. I like a bit of everything, you know, because it's my job.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do look for interesting records and different sounding records. And I'm not going to, you know, go deep into grime. I'm not going to go deep into electronica. I'm not going to go deep into jazz. But, you know, you dabble, you like everybody.
So,
you know, it's like skipping through an MP3 player, isn't it? It's like going, what do I fancy listening to now? I want some rap.
Completely.
Some in punk, you know, and mixing it up.
It was the beauty of night shifts when I worked at HMV, because we had specific members of staff at that point who ran the jazz section, who ran the hip-hop section, who ran the dance section, who ran... So they were experts on it. And on a night shift, you'd generally get to pick a CD each and it'd rotate.
Oh, wow.
And that's exactly that kind of thing. It'd just be that excitement of... Right, I've chosen my one, so I'm looking forward to my songs, but I'm equally as excited to hear what comes from everyone else who genuinely know about these things. And again, it's not going to be a whole evening of getting deep into jazz. It's going to be a jazz song coming on every five songs or whatever that's, you know, that takes it in there. So, it instantly shows I like yours and Robbie's and numerous others brought me back to that of kind of, this kind of, you never know where it's going to go. And it's not always... going to go somewhere you want it to go or are into as a listener. There's going to be stuff where you're like, this isn't my thing, but I'm glad it's there, because there's other stuff that wasn't my thing on first listen, and then suddenly it's hugely my thing. It's very much my thing.
Absolutely. And having said that, eclecticism, you know, is natural and brilliant, and, you know, it's what a lot of people like. I also do love listening to a grime show.
Yeah.
So I will listen to... you know, toddler tea on a Thursday night.
I mean,
playing
that's
dance
the beauty
reggae,
of the BBC now, is so much of it can be interlinked, is that you can play a song and kind of say,
if you
heard
that
on Jam Show or on Charlie Slough or on wherever else. Mm. There's such a beautiful interlinking. And again, as a label now, again, to give some tricks away, that comes into consideration. There's an awareness that, if you, for example, a Wemby Dolan's over, if we get him in for a session with a Charlie Slough and it's good, then that could get played on your show, on Huey's show, on Six Music, on all these different things. It's like, it's exciting that there's that link between all these different genres, that it's not a case of, whereas kind of before digital, for the kind of music that we were putting out, at least, we'd aim for your show, for Robbie's show, and then the peak would probably be if we can get Zayn's. Mm. We wouldn't really have any ambition anywhere other than that, because it's not like if it kills it on Zayn, BBC Two are going to go, oh, we'll give that a play. That went down well. Whereas now there is that with all the different digital stations all coming together in that respect.
Yeah, it's like a massive jigsaw, isn't it, in a way? It's like DJs want to, you know, play things that other DJs are playing, I think, if they like
and
it.
And it allows people to go deeper if they want to. And as you said, I'll wait for the next song if they don't. You can kind of say, look, I'm not going to play an hour of grime, but if you're feeling this, check out this. Yeah. Go to XYZ and, you know, you're there.
Even during my own show, you know, I know there's brilliant shows on One Extra whilst I'm on.
Yeah.
So I dip into their show sometimes to see what's happening,
you know. This is nice.
Yeah, because it's... and also doing radio is it's weird because... Obviously, I'm doing 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. Monday to Wednesday. I'm in the studio doing the show.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I'd love to be listening to John Kennedy and finding out what he's playing, you know.
Yeah,
but that's where Listen Again comes in, and track listings and everything, and podcasts.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with everything.
Completely.
So much great music.
But
out
I mean,
there.
I think it's the beautiful thing of podcasts and the way a lot of the shows are putting podcasts out as well. I think it's that thing of allows you to listen in your own time. And it allows, again, it's breaking down some of the walls of, it has to be Radio 1 or XF. Do you know what I mean? Any rivalries or anything like that. It's like, no, it's just, it's good music shows.
It's
one of the things when I sat down with, Chris Bourne at XFM, when I had my show, one of the first things I sat down with him was like, I'm only up for doing this if I can say that I heard a song on Hugh's show or on Zane's show or wherever else, or on John Kennedy's show or Eddie Temple Morris or Huey Morgan or whoever. I don't want to have to pretend that these other stations don't exist, because that's not the way that the radio has to be anymore. As you said, it can be this huge pot of people jumping from spot to spot and learning, and
I think you're right.
Everyone coming up and thriving together in that way.
Absolutely.
You've always, obviously, you mentioned the two words that I think, three letters and a word that I think are intrinsically attached to you now, of BBC Introducing.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's a wonderful thing, because it's something that will go out over the regional stations and will then have a home on your show, and you'll do your introducing section and the stages that you've done at Glastonbury, Reading and Leeds. Is the Latitude a one and introducing one? Because you've done Latitude from the first... I think that was the year that me and Dan played. I'm sure it was an introducing one then, and we played that years ago. And
you
headlined. It was... It's still one of our favourite ever gigs, because there's a few reasons. Number one... We lucked out that at that point, CSS didn't have a great live show.
All right.
So they were headlining the main stage at the same time, and a lot of people were leaving. And again, they're an amazing band. That's not, and it's just at that point they didn't have for that kind of show. And a lot of, and it happened that the Lake stage was in the thoroughfare of where you leave the main stage.
Yeah.
So our crowd just grew and grew and grew.
Right.
And by the time we were doing Thou Shout, we had a huge crowd there.
It was so exciting.
And it was like, this is amazing.
But it was the year of Thou Shalt Kill, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, as you know, everybody, Zane was playing it. You did Maid of Vale, I think.
Yeah, we did Maid of Vale,
For Zane in January.
Yeah.
And John Kennedy, of course.
Yeah.
Playing it, and Rob DeBank and myself. We were loving it.
Yeah.
So it was, it was made perfect sense for you and Dan to headline. I remember that. It was
the first
ever
stage we headlined. It was absolutely,
And the last.
Amazing.
No.
No,
it was incredible. Because I've seen your Latitude since in the literary arena. Is it the poetry? I'm not sure. But
it's
in
the literary arena, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
That's what I love about that festival, is that I don't go to a lot of literature or poetry events or comedy.
Yeah.
I go to gigs,
When I go to Latitude, I normally struggle to watch any music because of that stuff that's so available.
So good.
And music, again, if you're doing 10 festivals even over a summer, you're going to get a lot of chance to see a lot of good music.
It's kind of at Latitude,
you do kind of go, right, there's Adam Buxton is doing his interactive kind of bug show there, and just all sorts of other stuff. You're like, it's amazing.
Even just traditional poets
that
I hadn't heard of, and you just stumble upon them, you listen to 10 minutes of them reciting their poetry, and you're a fan,
you remember
the name, it's so good. But the year you played it might have been the BBC Introducing.
There's
the BBC Introducing stages at the festivals. Latitude, I've curated kind of independently from the first one for 10 years now. Latitude's 10 years old, which is brilliant. That's another great, very lucky to do that.
Yeah.
Total freedom to book whoever, almost.
Yeah, that's amazing, right?
And then the Introducing one, I mean, what BBC Introducing came about because the BBC's huge, apart from Radio 1 and Radio 2 and 6 and 1 Extra. Mm-hmm. There's all the local BBC stations.
Yeah.
So, if you're in any part of the UK, your local station might be your Radio 1 or your Radio 2. You might listen to it for news and for entertainment, traffic, whatever. So, and they all pretty much all had a new music show.
Yeah.
Which would support new music at some point for a couple of hours during the schedule. So BBC Introducing thought, well, let's make more of an impact of that.
Yeah.
So rather than one DJ in Sheffield playing amazing music, but nobody else outside of Sheffield knowing about it. That's a shame, Let's make more of an impact. So that's how Introducing
and
came
about. I love that because it allows, I guess, in essence, it's following your path in of being the Welsh Radio 1 and then getting that crossover. The thing that's exciting is And for any new bands listening who kind of turn their nose up at their local station or whatever, it's the beautiful thing there is you can kind of, you've got an in, because it's far easier to get a play on your local BBC station, on BBC Essex, on BBC Sheffield or whatever.
Yeah.
But then if that goes down well and you can drum support, it's a route into your show on full national a Radio 1, international Radio 1. Yeah, so it's kind of...
Absolutely.
It's, I love that there's an avenue there that you can go, right, I can see a way in now, rather than when previously you'd look and go, I don't know how to get played on Radio 1. I've not got a radio plug, or I've not got a label or all this. It's like, I don't know how to do it. There's now, well, here's a way. Mm. It's not a guarantee, but here's at least something to aim for and a route in, which I think's great.
That's how it works. It's as simple as that, you know. Bands who play locally and, as you say, have a relationship with their local BBC introducing show. I mean, there's so many examples from, like, you know, the show in Nottingham is brilliant. BBC East Midlands, Dean Jackson there supports so much great artists like Jake Berg in Indiana. And he's been playing them for a while before passing them on to us.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we hear it, we love it, we keep supporting them. So there's loads of great examples. And it's about, you know, bands will always want to go home to play. Artists will always want to have that local pride. And there is that pride from wherever you're from. If it's from a village or a part of London or a city, you know. You know, you want local people to do well. You want to get interested in the local music scene. So BBC Introducing tries to reflect that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's about, as you say, you might not have a label or an agent or a promoter. You might not understand how the complicated music industry works.
Yeah.
That's something you learn over time, isn't it?
Yeah, completely.
But as long as the music's great, then we'll play it.
The accessibility there is you can go on the regional sites and there's submission pages to upload your MP3, to put your information in. So again, it's set out for you there. It's really, it's kind of a case of if you look into it, then you can find a way. So I love that. You mentioned there of supporting people early on, and when doing a bit of research for today, I hated you a little bit.
Why?
Because I've always been very proud of having a Young Fathers on the beat down in the studio and supporting Young Fathers from early on. And I was looking at your A Music Sounds Better With Hugh thing from 2009's CD you put out, and you had the Young Fathers on there in 2009, which infuriated me because that way outbeats and outranks my early support of them.
Hey, as long as people know them. As long as people know them,
But again, I think things like that are amazing. It's great. It must be great for you to see things like that. Again, that pride. It's not that a local pride, but it's like, right, I've been excited about these guys for a long time, and now they've won a Mercury, and people have really seen how amazing they are.
I think they've changed a lot since then, musically.
Yeah. Yeah.
We took them to play the BBC Introducing Stage at Sona in Barcelona.
Yes.
Around that time, and it was thanks to Radio 1 in Scotland. Vic Galloway is a big supporter of Young Fathers.
Yeah.
I loved them. Put them on that compilation you mentioned. I mean, it just shows, I think, things don't happen overnight.
No, no.
Occasionally they do, but it's about hard work. You know, I've had artists who've played the Lake Stage at Latitude 10 years ago, and, you know, they're only starting to break through now and to release records worldwide and find their voice, find their style.
It's all a learning curve. As you as an example of coming in at 17 and developing, and I'm sure your style has changed on radio a lot as you've learnt more over the years. But people like a Young Fathers, when they appeared to explode out of nowhere, their live show was so polished and so different from what they used to be, kind of thing, and their sound had developed as well. So it's the Tommy Cooper thing. It's making it seem like it was easy. I've never heard of these guys, but they're the most polished, finished, wonderful thing I've seen. No, they've spent years polishing and working that, but it's just giving that illusion that
exactly. And
are we just stumbled into this?
There's Catfish and the Bottlemen as well, who are doing so well at the moment.
Smashing
you know,
at the moment.
Debut album's just come out. They've been doing it. I think Steve Lamacq played them on the radio about 6 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, a demo, and they've just stuck at it.
That's crazy.
I did one of these music panels recently, and somebody was going, "How do I get signed? I want to get signed. I haven't been signed. How do I get signed?" And I asked him, "How many gigs have you played?" He said, "3."
Yeah.
It's not going to happen after 3 gigs.
I guess
unless you're
so incredible. Mad at bands who don't
you've got just to work at it.
Gig hard and work constantly, because you've got to do a lot of crap gigs.
And that takes commitment, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It takes time.
And a lot of people, I think, will have done it in previous bands and therefore feel they've paid their dues. But it's like, well, no, whatever you're on at the moment, that still needs to go. Just every time you start a new project, you've got to look at it as you're starting at the bottom again, but with new knowledge and experience to see how to climb that way. But
absolutely. And I think just being focused and believing in yourself. Yeah. Like Young Fathers are a great example of that. They're going on tour with Paul Weller soon.
Yeah.
If you'd have told me, you know, if you still tell me now, I still find it so exciting to believe that. But because they've got this vision.
That's going to be amazing. It is going to be amazing. The crowd react. I always remember the years ago, me and Dan supported Billy Bragg, and it was the first time we'd done anything with Billy and become a firm favourite now and firm friends. But the first few songs, because we didn't have guitars, people were like, what is going on? And then as soon as we got to a bit more of the political stuff and stuff like that, that by the end, we'd won them over completely. There was it showed great faith from Billy to go, right, it'll take them a minute, but they're going to get you guys. They're going to see the essence and the connection there. And
yeah. And it worked.
Yeah. It worked a treat. And we've headlined his left field stage years later and had all these amazing experiences with his fan base. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing. But I like a Weller and Young Father seems like amazingly confusing, but wonderfully exciting to see how they are.
Isn't it? That's what I love about festival lineups. You know, when you see a poster for a festival, I can spend hours studying them, just seeing who's playing where. Even if I've read it before, like, you know, I'm looking at the festival lineup quite a lot now, because it's in a lot of the free papers or whatever online. And I just go, you know, you stop, you study, you think about that DJ, you think about that artist, and you go, okay, so that's happening, and that's on. It's so interesting.
I've always loved a festival because Robbie is so adamant about just putting the right things in the right order, if you know what I mean, that fit together nicely.
Right.
Rather than going, obviously it's different on the main stage at points, but rather than going, here's your biggest band, here's your next biggest band, here's your next biggest band, do you know what I mean? He'll generally go, well, these would work well after these, and these would go well here. And people who like them, I won't have heard of them, but will like it if they come in early and catch the end of it. Do you know what I mean? All that kind of thing. Yeah. There seems like that much intricacy going into that. But speaking of putting on festivals, let's talk about it's pronounced Soon, isn't it? Soon.
No, you're absolutely it's Soon, yeah.
Soon, I
and,
thought so.
Me and my friend
it's
John.
SWN.
SWN. Yeah. Me and my friend John run it, and what are we going to call this festival?
Yeah.
And I'm the Welsh speaker, and I said Soon. And he's like, yes, let's do that. I was going, it might be complicated, because all I get is, how do I pronounce it? Is it Swan? Is it Sween? Is it SW? You know, because
I'm glad I got it right first.
No, you did. So. It is SWN. And it's like How Soon Is Now, you know.
Yeah.
It's in Cardiff. Yeah. It was inspired by South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Going to Austin, Texas, and thinking, this festival is incredible. We need to do something like this in Cardiff. Because, as I said, Cardiff's small, you know. So I'd been to Iceland Airwaves in Reykjavik as well. And Reykjavik's small too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thought Cardiff would be perfect for it. So we've done it. It's our ninth year now in 2015. And John books it all now. I don't book it anymore just because I haven't got time. But he does a brilliant job in putting the lineups together. And so it happens in the city.
Just turn up and collect a check now, didn't you? Just cruise into town. Oh, just cruise into town and go win.
Can you imagine? I mean, if you want to lose money, start festival. Yeah. If you want to lose money, start record label.
Yeah, yeah.
All of that.
I contest that completely.
Just go for it. Just if you love it, just get involved. We just wanted to see something happening, really. You know?
I think it's one of the beautiful things with a label at the moment, and I have this, and it's terrible management as a label, but I look at a project and go, how much does this project mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
As in, how much am I willing to lose on this? And that's what the budget becomes. It's like, right, I'm not going to sit here thinking we're going to make a big profit. This is valuable to get out there. It's important that this is out there and done well and out to as many people as possible, rather than looking at it as, I want to be a label manager and be rolling in money. It's like, right, no, here's what I've earned this year. Here's how much of that I'm willing to give back to the music, essentially, you know.
And I guess all the labels that do make money now started off like that.
Yeah, completely.
The people who start off going, I want to make money,
yeah,
you know, stay away, stay away.
Exactly.
It's about passion. It's about listening. It's about feelings, isn't it? It's about, and that's what I love about so many great labels around, you know, around now. It is that passion. It is that commitment. Yeah. It's almost like a, you know, without wanting to making it sound fickle, like a coffee table thing. It's a whole lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got to live and breathe it.
Yeah,
it doesn't start at 9 and finish at 5.
Yeah.
It's what you do if you do a label, I think. And that's why I'm in awe of yourself and people who, you know, the independent label markets that happen in Spitalfields in London.
And
it's incredible.
I think that's the beauty. Again, it's, I mean, you said that you live and breathe it. And I think that's the thing, that when you're into music, it's finding any way that you can engage in that. Whether that be radio, a label, a festival.
Yeah.
You've also done a lot of writing, like you've written for The Enemy and The Independent, but the one I want to discuss is Kruger magazine, because what a great magazine Kruger was. I used to love that. Like, we'd get that when we'd play in Cardiff, and that was, I loved a Kruger. I had a Kruger t-shirt, I think I remember, and all sorts.
I still have my Kruger with a big skull on it.
Yeah, that's right, And that was a great magazine. It's stopped now, right? Is it no longer?
Well, Kruger came to an end. It was a free one from Cardiff, and they, in the end, I think, they circulated it across the UK.
Yeah.
And then, I think it came to an end. I don't want to speak on behalf of the editors, but again, if you want to lose money, start a little print magazine.
And it was a beautiful looking magazine as well, so it didn't look cheap, so you can imagine that.
I mean, Mike, who started it, is now the editor-in-chief of the NME.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we're all so proud of him because he's done so well, you know. And to go from running, you know, free, you know, started off as a fanzine, then a magazine.
Yeah.
To be in charge of the NME, which, of course, is going free soon, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad I...
As the print
I inadvertently kissed his ass there. You know, that might make up for my famous mocking of NME in Thou Shalt. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, of
we could
course.
Push for some support now that I've inadvertently raved about his starting point. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's telling me that a lot of those journalists that he was employed to write for Kruger back then have gone on to, you know, they've made a living and work in
they
music
were good.
Somehow,
I mean,
you know.
Kruger and Foggy Notions coming out of Dublin were two that we'd get, again, and again, similarly, they'd also be putting on gigs and stuff like that. So when we'd get to that place, we'd get a few back issues, and they were just so well written, so well researched, such insights into music and great takes on new music and all that it's not surprising at all when you hear that so many people from then have gone on to to bigger and better things. It's exciting about the NME going free, right? That's going to be interesting to see how that works.
I think it is. We're recording this week, and I think this week is the last paid one.
Yeah, because they've done a big history of kind of thing, I believe.
And I guess it is the end of an era in a way, in that it's all changing. You know, Mike always says it's not just about the print edition.
Yeah.
Online, it's the gigs, it's the tours, it's everything.
And the beauty of it now is it stops Thou Shalt Always Kill from not supporting it, because the line is Thou Shalt Not Buy NME.
Oh.
So now that it's free, it's like we're not even at war. No, it's fine. You're fine to have it for free. I never said that. I never spoke against it then.
I think it is good, isn't it? I mean, anything free is good.
Yeah.
I still, you know, as much as I check out blogs and read things online, I'll still pick up Loud and Quiet.
Yeah, and never flick through.
Yeah, and even if, you know, if it's a magazine that I haven't heard of in a town that I'm visiting, it's always good to know what's going on, because you might read something interesting or see something or find out about a band or an artist or whatever.
Yeah, completely.
So I think I think it is exciting that it's going free.
Yeah, I like that.
It's kind of the end of an era, I suppose, because, you know,
but again, if that's the way things are going now, and a lot of the biggest circulated papers out there with the Metro or whatever else are free, then again, you've got to try and adapt. And they're kind of the first big music one to go that route.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's always been things like The Fly and, you know, some of your smaller ones that are about, but it's a big risk and a big jump, but an exciting one.
It is. I wonder how long till the other ones go free, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And how print will stop full stop, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. It felt like it was go free or go home, essentially, at this point, which it feels like for a lot of printed press at the moment, where it's a continual struggle to get people to part with their money for it. Because, again, you get on any tube stop and people are handing free stuff to read at you. So if you want to read something, you can. And again, it's not necessarily what you wanted, but it's free. Therefore, it's a different appeal there.
It's become a treat now, I'll be honest, to buy a paper.
Yeah, yeah.
To it's normally on a train.
Yeah.
To read it, just because, like, you know, a lot of the articles are up online for free as well, aren't they?
So, can we talk about Other Voices, your RTE show with Aidan Gillen? I've recently did a film with Aidan and got on amazingly well. Weirdly, we connected because we were both in a book by a guy called Dan Hegarty called Buried Treasures, where he interviewed people about if there was an album that you would like everyone to hear, what would you pick? And we were both asked on that. So instantly on set, me and Aidan were talking about music a lot, and he's amazingly passionate about music and knowledgeable and into his stuff. So
he really is, isn't he? Yeah.
So how did all that come about? And what is the show? It's on RTE, so I've not seen it.
Yeah, it's in Ireland. Here. It's great. Other Voices. I'd heard about it. It's been going for 13 years.
Oh, really?
And it's in a town called Dingle, and which is a couple of hours from Cork. And after Dingle, it's America, you know. And it's a beautiful tiny town. There's a church there, and they put on and invite musicians to play there. So they've had hundreds over the years, I guess, you know, from Amy Winehouse, they made a big film about Amy coming to Dingle, to The National and Elbow, to all sorts of incredible artists.
Yeah.
And then they televise it as well, so it becomes a series in Ireland.
Yeah.
Philip King, who started it, presents a radio show called South Wind Blows on RTE2, I think. It's a really great show. It's an hour long.
Again, on set, Aidan was listening to recordings of that, in between... Yeah. I've never heard the show, but I'm sure it was that show he was saying. He was just saying it's just amazing.
He's great, and you know, the whole idea behind it is it's about listening and focusing on the artists playing. And there's only 60 people in the church.
Brilliant.
So what you create is this really special atmosphere where bands travel from all over the world to mainland Europe, and then they travel to Ireland, and then they have to travel to Dingle, and it's in December and it's cold and it's wet, but the welcome is so warm, you know, and people just listen and enjoy it. And so all I did was present it with Aidan, the current series, you know. So I mean, he's lived in Dingle as Aidan, so he knows it so well, and as you say, he's a massive music fan,
huge music fan. So
I just knew him from Queer as Folk
and The Wire
of course. And a bit of Game of Thrones, a couple of episodes I've seen, you know.
Yeah.
So I was aware of his work, and The Wire was the one, He was Mayor, what's his name, Mayor Calcetti?
Yeah,
amazing.
Fantastic.
And, he's a fascinating guy. And so Other Voices, they had a stage, actually. They do stages. They did one in New York.
Oh, really?
And London, and they did it at Latitude for the first time in 2015. Amazing. Yeah, and they had... Ed Sheeran turned up to play a little secret gig.
I saw he did a secret gig. Yeah. I didn't realise that was on the other stage.
The Other Voices. They made a church, essentially, next to the lake. It was incredible. And he played with the boys from Snow Patrol, who've obviously been to Dingle and love Other Voices. So so the people who put it together are big supporters of music, like a musical family. And they had Young Fathers on. And, traditional Irish guy, well, not traditional, but influenced, called Colm Mac Conymori, plays the violin.
Yeah.
It's just the most beautiful music.
Amazing.
And the same in Dingle, you know. I saw Young Fathers played the church, which was incredible.
Oh, I'd love to have seen that.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And they had Melanie de Biasio, who's this Belgian jazz singer.
Yeah.
Who I'd actually heard on a Giles Peterson show. So to see her play, it was just amazing.
Again, I love stuff like that because it feels, again, like those cool regional magazines that just, because there's no expectation or pressure that you have to be finding the next big thing or breaking this huge act, it feels like they're going, what is amazing? Like, what is truly amazing? Not what will sell copies of the magazine or what will pull this. What is just great?
What do we believe in?
Yeah. And then they just get to put that on there and go and have it in the church. And
as the same with, as you say, with the magazines and with festival lineups and with radio shows. I mean, we'd all like to play, you know, something that's going to be big. But if you go out looking for that, then often, you know, you can't make it up. It's about about luck, it's about gut instinct, yeah. isn't it? It's about passion yeah. and commitment from those artists and from the listeners.
Yeah, completely.
So vice versa, you know, it's back and forth, isn't it? So yeah, there's no logic to it, but No Other Voices is really special. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've climbed over the hour mark, so I'll start to wrap things up, but I want to discuss very recent receiving of an honorary a fellowship from Bangor University.
Thanks, Pip.
Was that this month? Obviously, this is going out in August. It was in, July?
It was in July, yeah. And
What happens there? Do they contact you to say kind of...
You get a letter
yeah.
from Bangor Uni. Because I was going to go to Bangor to study
yeah.
When I was offered a job from Radio 1. And
it's remembering the crazy part of how key an age 17 is, that offer is right when you're probably trying to decide what you want to do with your life and all this kind of thing, yeah. and you're suddenly, oh, here's what I'm doing with my life, I'm broadcasting, that's decided.
That was it, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is quite scary, because, you know,
petrifying.
I'm 34 now, I still don't really know
yeah.
what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you don't, exactly. So every day's like, you know, something new. They offered, and I was delighted. And they offered my cousin Griff from the Super Furry Animals as well. We're cousins.
Right, I didn't know.
Yeah, they didn't know we were cousins.
Amazing.
So I had to tell them, my Griff is getting with my cousin as well. They were like, oh, we had no idea, you know. So Griff and myself.
Family affair,
I think. You know, I can't think of anyone who deserves an honorary degree more than Griff, really, for everything that he's done. He's from Bethesda, just outside Bangor, and, you know, his passion and, well, his talent first and foremost, I guess, but also his, just the way he is in terms of music, and not just
completely
Welsh things, but in general, you know.
In general, but I was going to say that it sounds odd, but his Welshness... Because it's very much every band with where we listed the Stereophonics and the Manics and things like that. There's people who could listen somewhere in the world and not really know where they're from. Whereas Griff and the Super Furries just bleed a Welshness. It feels so, you know. So I think,
but also they're an international band as well. So they'll play worldwide. They've just been to Japan.
Yeah.
But they released Mung, which. It was an entirely Welsh language album.
Yeah.
After releasing a couple of really successful ones on Creation Records,
yeah.
and you know that went into I think it went number 11 in the UK album charts entirely in Welsh, and it's just been reissued by Domino as well.
It's crazy.
It's
isn't
an
it?
Exciting time to be a Super Furry Animals fan,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's done a lot of solo stuff as well. Yeah. He's worked with Boom Bip on the Neon Neon.
The Neon Neon stuff on Lex Records. Yeah, it was all amazing.
Yeah.
So and it all looked cool as fuck. It was all nice cars and just slick looking.
Well, Griff studied art.
Yeah, oh, right.
So he's...
I mean, Alex is the perfect label for that kind of thing because they just obsess over album covers and packaging and everything just looks so beautiful. And again, another label that will sacrifice profit in the name of, man, this is a nice piece of collectible material.
Yeah.
They've done that with MF Doom. They did it with Thou Shalt. Thou Shalt came out on Lex, and it was a beautiful matte print with Thou Shalt Always Kill in glossy, so you could only see it if you turned the light properly and things like that. And it's like, looking back now, we hardly had any following. That was a ridiculous business choice on the part of Lex of spending that much on this beautiful thing. But
there's a golden,
again, it meant something.
Golden Rules album coming out. Paul White.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't forget the name of the rapper that he's worked with.
It
from the States.
Was it? Homeboy Sandman. No, it isn't on that. No, that was their previous one.
I don't know who it is, but what the tracks.
Because he's produced for Danny Brown. He's produced for Homeboy Sandman.
Right.
I can't think of his.
But it's coming out on gold vinyl.
Yeah,
of course it is.
It's pretty amazing.
So that's my next purchase.
Paul White's amazing, and we had a similar thing that I was telling a girl who was supporting us on tour about Paul White. Because when me and Dan were on our last tour, I was doing the beatdown still, so I was doing it from on the road.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'm playing this track by UK producer Paul White. He's amazing.
Mm.
And the woman that was supporting us was Sarah Williams White, who is his sister, it turns out. And I just hadn't tweeted. And White's quite a regular name, is it? But she was like, oh, yeah, that's my brother. And I felt like such an idiot because I'd maybe forgotten his name at first. I was like, I think I was more talking about Homeboy Sandman. It's like, oh, have you heard this guy, blah, blah, blah. It's produced by a guy called Paul White. She was like, yeah, that's my brother. And I was like, all right, cool. cool. Yeah. That's lovely.
I had the same with Marika Hackman, who's a singer-songwriter recently, yeah. And I went, you've got to check out this producer, Hackman. He shares the same name as you, and obviously he was exactly the same. He's going, yeah, he's my brother. Yeah. I had no idea. You know, I'd been playing them both on the show, imagine a remix.
I love the innocence of that. Of yeah. Going, this is weird. You should. It's like your family. It's like, we are family. Really, that's why it's like that.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So, I mean, I wrap things up by talking about the responsibility, and I may be wrong, but I think this is going to be an interesting answer. The responsibility of DJs to support and play a new music, because knowing you've done daytime stuff as well, I think you also have an appreciation for when it doesn't have to be that, if you know what I mean. People often assume I will hate all music that isn't political and social and things like that, and I don't. I think there's a space for everything, and I think if all music was like my music, then it'd be boring, and you know, the same of any genre. So, where do you think that level lies with a commitment to new music and just a commitment to playing what a lot of people want to hear? It's as simple as that.
Well, I mean, for a broadcaster, it's a mix, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I work for the BBC, and there's that balance of playing and creating popular hits as well.
Yep.
And I love Taylor Swift as much as the next person. I think her album's amazing.
It's an amazing record.
But I'd love to hear something new and exciting next to it, you know?
Yeah.
And that happens, you know, happens on... That's why there's playlists there, and that's why hits are created and record labels and artists are supported. Take Rudimental, for example.
Yeah.
You know, really want to support them from day dot, and Black Butter Records have... But still release them and continue to go from strength to strength and brought loads of other artists through as well. So, I mean, new music has to start somewhere. It has to have that platform.
Yeah.
And obviously nighttime DJs are a big part of that.
Yeah.
But obviously nighttime doesn't mean anything now because you can listen at any time and people listen worldwide. So
in a way it gives more power to the nighttime DJs in that respect, because it's got its freedom to not just be, if you happen to be tuned in the middle of the night, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, we listen out for new music. It's our job. It's what, you know, it is a responsibility. It's a really fun responsibility to have.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong, but you just want to make sure that everybody gets a fair crack of the whip, that everybody gets an audience that they deserve, really, and that if someone is interesting and good, it's my job to highlight it at a festival, at a gig, on the radio, you know.
And again, I think it governs itself quite a bit. Like, people will be incredibly excited to get their play on Radio 1, and it does mean the world to new artists and everyone. But the fact is, sometimes that play will be simply that. It will be a play because it won't work, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it's that weird thing of some people will feel, I know there's certain bands that complain that Radio 1 ignore them and don't play them, but then often bands that Radio 1 have played before...
Yeah,
and it didn't then kick off, and it's like that's not Radio 1's fault. You can't all. I know sometimes you do, but you can't always have that loyalty to. No, they need to get this band. I need to keep showing them why they need the fans and need to get this.
There is that element to it, you know. There's the music that you love. It's all music that you love. Otherwise, you wouldn't be playing it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you play records that you don't love yourself, but you know there's an audience out there that will love it. And not everybody's going to become massive. And as you say, sometimes it is just a play, one play, and sometimes it's 10 plays and that's it, you know.
Yeah. Is there anyone that when you've stepped in on the more daytime slots that you've been like, this is a band I'm taking with me to daytime, they need to hear this? Like, who have you really championed in that respect of going, right, I'm now on in the middle of the day and this always goes down well on my show, but for whatever reason... Fern hasn't wanted to play it or whoever else, and then when you're in there get that chance to go ha ha.
There's been a few, you know. There's that standing in on daytime is exciting because it is a lot more listeners, and it's a, you know, it's millions more, and it's a whole new platform. So sometimes it's artists like Lord, who a friend of mine from New Zealand told me about, and we started playing a track. She hadn't released anything and got her into Maida Vale, and then she becomes huge, you know, good. Same with like 1975 and Bastille early on as well, artists that I were playing. But then there's other extremes where I remember playing DJ Rashad, who sadly passed away, a song called It's Not Right.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just the most exciting 3 minutes of electronic music that I'd heard, you know.
Yeah, so I was
playing it at night and I loved it, and kind of footworky Duke music, you know, which I know very little about, but I'm fascinated by this one record. I thought, this is going to be exciting on daytime.
Yeah.
The texts of complaints were pages long, you know, on a screen. It was like hundreds.
You can just never tell, going, can
what
you?
What is this? Don't ever play this again. Get off my radio. It's like, here's Ollie Murs.
And that was always my argument when me and Dan, like, particularly when I think our second album came out and the label, after the first one had done far better than anyone could have hoped, the label in particular, like, we need to get these daytime plays.
Right.
And my argument was, a lot of the time, the music that's on daytime on Radio 1 isn't our kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So we will go down better on Hugh's show, on Zane's show, because it'll be a smaller audience, but it'll be an audience that are more likely to like it than dropping us in after whoever at that point. I can't think of who was a big pop act at that point that we wouldn't fit in with at all. When
Lady
people
Gaga.
Are going to be doing that, texting in and saying, why is this bloke just talking, what's going on, this is awful, make it go away. It's like,
but you can't
force yourself into certain places and situations.
No, but having said that, I think if people did hear you on daytime, a lot of people go, this is incredible, who is this? And that's the power of radio.
I guess so, that's the excitement.
You're in
the,
people's lives and you can introduce people to music.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I think maybe the example I gave of one record, you know, it's happened with other records as well, but that was the most memorable one. But at the same time, listeners love music, you know.
Yeah.
Even people who are who just love pop, they will love a Bring Me the Horizon song or a Scroobius Pip track.
Yeah.
If it's the right one, if it's the right time.
Well, I mean, again, just going in the opposite direction, the fact is, I know metalers, punk kids, all sorts, who are posting Taylor Swift videos.
Right.
So going in that opposite direction of, if it's a damn well-written pop song, then it's a damn well-written pop song. It is what it is. I think A Lord's a great example, though, of how it's that thing that it could have been so independent and niche, but as soon as you put it out there, there's a girl called Sarah Winters that I'm a big fan of that's got that same kind of thing of, it feels like I listen to it and, like, this is amazing, this is my little secret, but then you could also see it being on every trailer, on every advert, being the biggest thing in the world. So I love stuff like that.
It's brilliant. You know, I think people just need to keep making music, and as long as you enjoy it, other people will come along for the ride, and that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
It really is. So where can people keep up to date with everything you're doing? What's the best place?
Twitter, just Hugh Stevens.
And that's H-U-W Stevens, with a P-H.
With a P-H,
obviously.
Exactly. And I'm on Radio 1 three nights a week, so Monday to Wednesday, 10 p.m. till 1.
Perfect.
And thanks for having me on,
Thank
Pip.
You very much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's an honour, pleasure.
Again, it's another one that's just flown by as ever, so thank you for coming and chatting.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Piece.
There we go. How lovely is Hugh Stevens? And I teased it at the end of the last episode with Dr. Susie Gage. How good is Houdini as a name for a Welsh magician? I thought that was possibly the best thing I've ever heard. Houdini. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And fascinating to hear his whole story there. And as I mentioned at the start in the intro, him getting snapped up at 17. And, I mean, we talked about it a lot in the podcast as well, obviously, but starting at 17 at the biggest radio station in the country and being there ever since and just smashing it and pushing new music, protecting celebrating the Welsh language and Welsh culture. So, yeah, amazing guy. If you enjoyed this one, I'd recommend... I said I'd only had a Welsh guest. We have had Howard Marks, who is Welsh, but Eddie Temple Morris is Welsh. So we've had two Welsh guests on in the past. So check them both out. Eddie obviously also being a radio DJ, so worth a look. Obviously, you could check the Zane Lowe one out, the John Kennedy one, which Hugh had listened to
just before we recorded this and was slightly in awe of, because John Kennedy's just an amazing, amazing dude, amazing broadcaster. And it was just a hell of a podcast. The stories, the amount of people who were just saying it's the most interesting one they'd heard, and they weren't expecting that. They'd expected to hear a little bit about a guy who works in a radio station, but were just blown away by his fascinating, fascinating life and passion for music. So check that out as well. Thank you for tuning in. Subscribe. That's a good thing. That helps support us. It doesn't cost you a penny to subscribe. You can subscribe. You can set to automatic download. You will not miss an episode. And to be honest, you have automatic download. You check that episode out. If it ain't your thing, delete it. But, you know, at least you've got it there as the option. And quite frankly, at least I get the fucking download. So do what you want, son. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week as ever. This has been the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 54.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.